Welcome to Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. I'm your host, Dean Beaver, and I'm once again joined by my lovely wife, Meredith.
Hello.
We have a special guest here in the audience.
In the audience.
God damn it. We're off to a great start.
So I get to talk. I just have to sit here and just like, wow.
You're like a plant.
Yeah. Is a good friend of mine back when I lived in Chicago. She is also the producer and co-host of the Speak Beastie podcast. Everyone, please welcome Anne Lisi to the show. Anne, thank you so much for joining us.
Woo! One person in the audience, it's me.
Let me start up the applause light.
Do you have like an 8-bit applause soundtrack?
I don't
Wasn't
know.
Wasn't there one of like the Family Feud video game or the Price is Right video game where I was like, pause?
Maybe there's crowd sound effects from Punch Out that I could maybe single out, but I'll figure out something in post.
Fine. Well, I think that needs to go like right.
All right.
I will and do like that. Anytime I say something really fun.
Great.
Well, thank you for having me. What a delight. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. As I'm sure you know by this point, Anne, we have a few questions that we ask all of our guests when it's their first time on. Sometimes we ask it when the second, but I haven't really formalized that process yet. But our first question is, please give us your life story in the span of a tweet, which isn't really a question, that was more of an order, but...
Okay, well, I wrote this down and I typed the character count because I'm a nerd and when I'm given an assignment, I do the assignment. So this is 179 characters. NJ, arrow emoji, AR, arrow emoji, VA, arrow emoji, CHI. Met a boy, followed a boy, married him. Now I work an office job to subsidize his acting career and fund trips to every Disney park in the world and every Wizarding World in the world.
Awesome. I'm going to count that as an extra character. So that brings us right to 180. Congratulations. We have another question. What is your personal history with video games?
So when I was growing up, we were a Sega family.
Okay.
You might, I don't know if you can tell that from looking at a person. They're a Sega family or a Nintendo family.
We all have our problems, so.
But it was mostly my brother's. He had a ton of games. I remember we had the 3 Sonic games. We had the 32X. We had the Sega CD. So it was a fully pimped out Sega system.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And... I was and am bad at video games, so I mostly was just player 2. I played as Tails a lot because he's immortal, and I liked that because it meant I could never meaningfully die.
Yeah, that's definitely a little sibling thing.
Then I kind of moved away from console gaming to more towards PC gaming, in which I mostly just played The Sims, Sims 1, Sims 2, Sims 3, currently Sims 4. And then once my husband and I moved in together, we got... a Wii, and then a Wii U, then a Switch. So now our upstairs, our study is like a graveyard of Nintendo systems that have 3 rhythm games and a Lego game for them. Because that's the kind of games I like. I like a Lego game, I like puzzle games, rhythm games, any games where there's no combat and you don't have to be mean to people.
Yeah, I don't like being mean to people.
Yeah, Meredith
loves GTA.
I don't know what that is.
Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, no, I really hate Grand Theft Auto. With the fiery passion to that.
It was a jokey joke.
Yeah. I just want to tell everybody that I am, like, recording this on my new fancy AirPods.
Okay.
I'm really excited about it.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Like, I used to have to keep my head in a position when I talked because I was, like, talking to the microphone, and I don't know if Dean edited this out or not, but in previous episodes, I couldn't, like, like, I couldn't hear myself, and that really bothered me, and now I can hear myself, and I can hear you, and it's great. And I have them because Dean got them for me for my anniversary, and I accidentally opened the Amazon package early.
Yeah, that was the thing. She was like, your AirPods are here. And I was like, and I did that whole, like, correction thing that I do in texts, and it was like, my AirPods. And I was like, happy anniversary.
Oh!
I thought it was my shirt, so I just kind of ripped it open without even, like, looking or even feeling it. I just, like, lifted it up. It's my shirt! And I was like, oh, it's not my shirt.
So now I gotta get something else.
Yeah, you do.
He said, I was like, you don't have to get something else. AirPods are really expensive, but he said he got like a ridiculous deal on them. So
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I found them for a stupid price. I'm low-key worried that a migrant child died for this price.
I mean, wouldn't you be more worried that maybe now they'll explode in her ears while she is recording this very podcast?
That's a thing that you could be worried about.
Eh.
Okay. I am a mortal until proven otherwise.
But going back to your rhythm game collection, you know, not everybody needs to be like a hardcore speedrunner. There are some people out there that speedrun Final Fantasy VII 100%. There's this guy, I used to watch him, but I don't watch him anymore. But it was really funny towards the end of his run, because that run takes you like 22 hours or so. He's been doing
it. Do I want to know how he goes to the bathroom?
There are some lengthy cutscenes in that game.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely pop out like at the end of disc one there when Aeris dies. Spoilers, I guess.
For a 20-year-old
game?
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, I guess part of it is like time and when you have to go to the bathroom and maybe eating. But it's funny because he's been playing a video game for 22 hours straight towards the end of it, and he's like delirious. There's some things that you have to get like towards the end of the game where you only get like one chance to do it, and if you don't do it, you have to like reset your game, and that wastes like 5 minutes for the game to boot up. What I'm saying is that you don't have to go to those extremes to play video games.
Well, that's good, because my claim to fame is that I've never gotten less than 5 stars on Katy Perry's California Girls in Just Dance 2019.
Awesome.
So, I'm killing it.
So let's go ahead and jump into the episode. I did something that I really haven't done before on the podcast, in that I gave the guest a choice.
What?
Yeah, usually when
he's a dictator.
I am. I rule this podcast with an iron fist. Usually I kind of let the topic dictate who I bring in on the podcast, but I wanted to switch things up a little bit, so I did the inversion of that. And I gave her 3 vague choices and she chose one.
Oh.
That being said,
even what you've chosen, Anne?
I mean, my choices were a world leader, a gigantic disaster, or a comic strip.
Oh.
And being someone who likes themed entertainment and weird old comic strips, of course I went for the comic strip.
I would have thought that that's what you would have gone for as well. Yeah.
So.
Well, you were the only one, because I got a text back that says that was a surprise.
I mean, I thought about it more and I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But anyway, so that being said, let's go ahead and jump right in. The Addams Family was first published in the New Yorker in 1938.
For those of you who can't see, which is everyone, Anne like squished her fists up next to her face like a little anime girl.
No, the Addams Family comic is the fucking... Oh, we can cuss, right? We're not going to get...
Yes, I think so. Okay. Right?
Yeah, we're past the first minute, so YouTube rules apply.
It's the fucking bomb. Like, it's so dark. It's so good. I'm so excited for this.
We're going to talk about that content transition a little bit. Initially published as single panel comics from cartoonist Charles Addams, the Addamses are a satirical inversion of the 20th century American family. Quote, an odd, wealthy, aristocratic clan who delight in the macabre and are seemingly unaware or unconcerned that other people find them bizarre or frightening, end quote. The Addams Family has had a profound impact on American media, making the top 10 of TV Guide's 60 greatest TV families of all time, as well as being cited as an inspiration of goth subculture.
So the TV show, you know how they have those snap?
Indeed.
When I was taking sound design in college, I'm going to date myself a little bit here. We still had to learn how to splice tape on reels. So I was taking advanced sound design. So we had to splice out every snap analog and replace it with another sound.
Oh my God.
I know. And most people did like, they would do the same sound over and over. I didn't realize that that was an option. So mine was like, ended up being inadvertently like the best, because I went and got recorded people saying something like in the pattern of the snap, and like spliced every single person like in order. Like, so like there was like a little story being told in the snaps. So that's my Addams Family story. That's my contribution.
That's amazing. I hope you got an A.
I did. I got an A in the whole class, and that professor notoriously hated everyone.
When you were talking about editing audio and like actually physically altering the reels, like I full body shuddered because I'm like, I edit all of the podcast episodes and I'm not the greatest editor. Sometimes it's like hard enough for me to just work in Audacity.
Yeah. And you have to like sit there and listen to it and go forward and back and forward and back. And then you find the exact spot and you mark it with a little chalk. Yeah. And then you cut it with a little X-Acto knife. Yeah. And then you just tape that shit back together. Yeah. And you have to make sure it matched so that it rolled over the heads seamlessly.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It was the 90s, my friends.
The Addams consist of a tight-knit extended family. Parents Gomez and Morticia. Children Wednesday and Pugsley. Uncle Fester.
Her name is Wednesday.
Uncle Fester. Grandmama Frump. Cousin It and their butler Lurch. There's also It in there, but I don't know if he's actually like a registered Addams.
It?
The hand?
Yeah, or... the hand.
Okay. He was just called the hand, right?
No, I thought...
It was the hair.
No, oh, that's, yeah. I thought the hand was It. Hang on.
No, the okay. Hair is Cousin It. I'm looking it up.
Yeah, the hair is definitely Cousin It.
Okay.
Because I used
thing,
to
have... Thing, that's the hand.
That's
thing,
it. All right. Yes.
I used to have really long hair and I would comb it over and put...
Morticia is known to have a pet lion named Kitty Cat. And Wednesday... And Wednesday, an octopus named Aristotle.
I didn't remember that either. That is so freaking cool.
That is super cool.
It's interesting to note that none of the characters had names until the 1964 television adaptation. The family motto is Sic gorgiamus allos subjectatos nunc, which loosely translates to We gladly feast on those who would subdue us.
Ooh, nice. Love that.
I like it a lot.
Per creator Charles Addams, Gomez and Pugsley are enthusiastic. Morticia is even in disposition, muted, witty, sometimes deadly.
Grandma, I would call her dry.
Grandma Frump is foolishly good-natured. Wednesday, by the time we finish this quote, you'll find out that Charles Addams does not like Grandma.
Oh.
Grandmama Frump is foolishly good-natured. Wednesday is her mother's daughter. A close-knit family, the real head being Morticia, although each of the others is a definite character, except for Grandma, who is easily led. Many of the troubles they have as a family are due to Grandma's fumbling, weak character.
Wow! Oh
that's mean. That's harsh.
That's super mean.
The house is a wreck, of course, but this is a house-proud family just the same, and every trapdoor is in good repair. Money is no problem. The Addamses have gone through varying degrees of cultural relevance since their inception in the late 1930s. The family was brought into American televisions, starting with a 1964 live-action sitcom, which took a less evil approach to the family and made them more zany than spooky. A 1972 Scooby-Doo crossover episode launched a 1973 animated series.
I used to watch The Mystery Machine. Now, I'm not that old, but I think I remember that. It must have been a rerun.
I think everybody's had network television at some point.
So, fun fact, just about Scooby-Doo, not about the Addams Family, but one of my friends didn't realize that Don Knotts was real because she only encountered him in Scooby-Doo specials.
Oh, my God.
So, when she found out he was real in her 20s, it was a big shock.
Oh, geez. By that same logic, Sonny and Cher don't exist. That's
also most of the cast of Supernatural.
I remember wondering, like, I remember being confused. Now I was 12, so I think it's a little more admissible. But I remember, like, being confused as to whether or not Sherlock Holmes was a real person.
That's a little more acceptable. I remember, even when I was young, I would watch those, like, Scooby-Doo guest star specials because they were rerunning them on Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoon Network was the best.
I remember, even when I was young, getting really pissed off. Like, I hate laugh tracks in television shows.
He really does.
I hate them. And these crossover episodes...
And Gene doesn't hate a lot of things.
These crossover episodes had a fucking laugh track.
I'm oh like, my God.
You're not even pretending anymore.
just not funny.
I love being told when to laugh. I love it. The Adamses' activity was fairly subdued through the 1980s before a revival in the 1990s with two feature-length films and a 1992 animated series. Two computer animated films were released, 2019 and 2021, to largely negative reviews, both holding a 44% and 30% respective scores on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't even remember those.
It is a goddamn travesty that they cast Oscar Isaac in those films, Gomez Adams, and it's an animated movie. Like, you have Oscar Isaac's face as best husband Gomez Adams, and you are not using that face. You are just using his voice. It's a great voice. Don't get me wrong, but it's not. You need the face too. Travesty.
Awesome. Did they like make the cartoon like look like his face at all?
No. I don't. Hang on. I'll pull it up. It's awful. Like the animation style. Maybe somebody likes it, but it's not.
I did not watch either of those films, and I have no immediate plans to.
But I didn't realize that was a thing that happened. When was this? What years were these?
2019 and 2021.
Oh, we were here.
Yeah, I think.
Oh God, that's awful.
Right.
I think they were going for like the original like 1938 cartoon style, which there's very limited resource material to go on. Especially if you're like, the Adamses are going on a tropical vacation.
It looked almost like they were trying to kind of do that Pixar-ish kind of animation, but like it doesn't work with my limited knowledge of the Adams family. I don't feel like it works with the flavor of the intent of the show.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
In 2021, Netflix announced a new television show which focuses on Wednesday Addams solving mysteries with her psychic abilities.
I didn't know she was psychic, did I?
I think they kind of made that up for this show.
Okay.
It will star Jenna Ortega as Wednesday and be directed by Tim Burton. It will also feature Luis Guzman as Gomez and Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia.
And Christina Ricci's going to be in there too, isn't she?
She is, but she's not Wednesday, so why bother?
Fair enough.
Like how unsurprised I am that Tim Burton is directing this.
I mean, I guess at least on the plus side, he's broken up with Helena Bonham Carter, so she can't be like shoehorned in there somewhere.
Right.
Not that she's not great, but...
I mean, my joke was always like, Tim Burton is drawing a picture with crayons, and he draws one stick figure, and he's like, "Hi, this is me." So he draws another stick figure, and he's like, "This is Johnny Depp." And then he draws a heart around everybody, and was like, "We're married."
Oh,
Uncle Fester is one of the key members of the Addams family. He is pale, hunched, barrel shaped, and completely hairless.
Me too.
He is masochistic, deriving pleasure from receiving pain that a normal human couldn't hope to withstand. He also appears to have the ability to generate electricity, frequently activating light bulbs by placing them in his mouth. In an episode, in an episode of the sitcom, Fester claims that he possesses 110 volts, which is suitable to power most of your modern electronic needs.
Yeah, but most people actually produce more than that.
We do?
Yeah, the average person produces like 600. I'm thinking of watts. Sorry, okay. I don't know the watt of voltage.
I was gonna say, how come my phone's always dying? If I can just, it sounds like I should just be able to hold it.
Well, yeah, you should if you could direct your electricity in that way. But because it only takes 6 watts to power a phone, about. But some people when they're like really going at it, like athletes and stuff, they're producing like 1,000 watts.
Wow.
But, you know, it's going like in us. It's not like we can't like.
Yeah, we can't like Magneto shit.
Yeah, alas.
I can't put a light bulb in your mouth and just cross the finish line with the light bulb.
Now I need to know what watts to volts is.
Okay. He's said to live alone in a shack on the Adams property.
And oh, it's 1-to-1.
Wow.
Damn.
So then that's actually not that impressive.
Yeah, so Fester actually kind of sucks.
Yeah.
He's said to live alone in a shack on the Adams property, and according to the 2009 musical, he is in love with the moon.
Aww, aww. That's sweet and sad.
I saw that musical. It wasn't that great. Uncle Fester's exact relation to the rest of the Adams is somewhat unclear. While he was originally stated to be Morticia's maternal uncle, He is largely regarded as Gomez's brother since the 1970s.
I was going to say, that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
In the 1991 film, Fester, portrayed by Christopher Lloyd, is long lost to the Adams, said to have disappeared. Christopher Lloyd, like, first off, this isn't the first time that we've talked about Christopher Lloyd on the podcast.
It's not actually.
So it's kind of amazing, like, how much he popped up during the late 80s and early 90s, because, like, everybody's... I
mean, that was his heyday.
Yeah, it was, but, like, maybe this was just me growing up, but, like, whenever somebody brought him up, I was like, oh, Doc Brown. But
yeah.
There's also, like, Judge Doom. There's the villain in that one. I think it was Star Trek 3. Then there's Uncle Fester, so, like...
He did a lot of things.
Yeah, busy guy.
But Back to the Future was, I still think, his biggest thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Said to have disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. He appears amnesiac.
Was anyone else just really fascinated by the Bermuda Triangle when they were younger?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, where was it? Like, if you go there, will you vanish? Will you go to this place? Like,
what happens when... Did either of you ever watch The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest growing up? It was a god-awful reboot of the Johnny Quest series.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, I think they went to the Bermuda Triangle at one point.
Oh my god. And I knew that Amelia Earhart had disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle or something. And I was just like, I like really thought that if you went there, like you were going to disappear. Like it was some kind of portal. Like you were, I didn't think of like it being a storm section or something like that. I just thought like you go into this little area on Earth and you're gone.
You're gone forever.
I definitely grew up more worried about the Bermuda Triangle than I ended up having to worry about it.
That and getting set on fire.
Yeah.
Like, stop, drop, and roll was so ingrained that I really thought that I was going to be in danger of this shit. Like,
he set on fire, like, regularly, right?
Yeah. Knew how to stop, drop, and roll. Knew about the Bermuda Triangle.
That, and I thought that way more people were going to be offering me weed in parking lots for free.
Yes.
And that I was going to have to tell them no, but I can tell you, I can guarantee you, no one has offered me weed for free.
Or anything that I didn't
want. Or anything, right?
Like, I never got offered, in middle school, I was never offered booze or drugs on the playground. Never happened.
Like, the most, I would say there's the dude in the front of the McDonald's on State Street who, like, will be like, hey, but he doesn't want, he's not going to give it to me for free. He expects me to give me my hard-earned American dollars.
Yeah.
most of them do, I think.
I don't think I've told this story on the podcast yet, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. Right after I got my driver's license, me and my twin brother got him at the same time.
As you would.
We were going to something at the community theater that we were really involved in Peoria. But before that, my dad wanted us to get dinner at KFC. So we drove to the KFC and we got there before him. And we didn't want to like sit in the car, so we got out. And we were just hanging out waiting for my dad. And there's a guy like a few cars down also hanging out. And so he sees us.
Attention bells.
Oh my God. I know. When is the free weed happen? I'm so.
It doesn't happen. I don't want to spoil the story, but this guy sees us and he goes, hey, you two waiting for hoes?
Because that's probably what he was doing.
And we go, wait. I'm sorry?
They're Midwestern.
And he goes, are you two waiting for broads? And we're like, nope, sorry. He goes, I bet you guys like the weed, don't you? The weed! Nope, sorry. And then my dad came and we went into the KFC, and that's kind of an anticlimactic end to the story, but it was still weird that it happened.
Is there anything more like existentially depressing than picking up a hose in the KFC parking lot, Peoria, Illinois? Jesus.
And yelling at two little teenagers.
And yelling at children.
Yeah, we were maybe 17 if we were really lucky. It was winter, so... Which brings another question. Why was I waiting outside the car in winter? But
Peoria.
It was a series of tragic decisions. Anyway.
I'm sorry. Sorry, sir. Would you repeat the question? When I was 16, I got rear-ended by drunk prostitutes on the way to school.
Wow.
I don't know how much time we have on the podcast, but I could tell that story.
Sure, go for it.
I literally have nothing to do today, so I'm good.
So I was driving my sister to school, and she was a freshman, and I was a junior. So it's her first day for freshman year, my first day of my junior year. And I think my first day driving to school, like as a, you know, I was going to drive and I was going to park my car at school. Like I was an adult. And so we're driving and we're stopped at a railroad track and you hear the screech and you feel the boom. And I was pissed because my car was new to me. And so I go, I think I said like, damn it or something, which, you know, was a big deal. And I like threw the car in park and jumped out. And like these ladies were obviously drunk. They're hanging out. This is Louisiana. So they're barely dressed. They're hanging out the car. And the driver goes, there's no damage to your car, hun, but we can call the cops if you want. You got insurance? And I'm like, yes. Like I'm immediately thrown off balance. And she's like, yeah, I do too. And I was like, okay. And there's like a line of people trying. It's like a major. So I'm like, okay, I guess. And I didn't know that you're not supposed to move your car or anything. And not that it ended up being a problem, but I was like, maybe we can just go in that parking lot. And I want to call my parents. And this is before cell phones and all that stuff. We pull into the parking lot and their car is like crunched. Like the front of their car is messed up. The back of my car, I had like, it was a newer car. So it had like a fiberglass kind of bumper. So it had popped back out. And there was like a couple scratches, like nothing big really. But I just had a bad feeling. And I was like, I just really need to call my dad. And they were like, yeah, call your daddy. You want to talk to your daddy. And I was just like nothing was open. It's like 7 a.m. And so we had to walk to a payphone. So I had to leave my sister who's 14 with one of them with a car. And I had to walk with the other one. And I was 16. So I'm walking with the other one. We had to walk all the way around the back of this store, this Walmart, and like use quarters to call people. And so like this one lady calls her person first. And she's like, yeah, we hit these kids on the way in. We're going to need you to, come by. There's no damage to her car, but she wants to call her dad. Yeah. Oh, and you know, those cigarettes I left there, I'm going to need you to bring those because there's someone's social security number in there. Yeah. To this day, I have no idea what the F that means. Anyway.
Oh my God.
So then on the phone, she leaves. Thank God. She leaves me alone. But now my sister's going to be alone with both of them. So I'm like calling my dad and he's not answering. And I'm just like plunking the quarter in and it keeps bouncing back out because he just won't pick up. And he had one of those brick cell phones, but he just was not picking up. And so I call my mom and I tell her what's going on. And she's still at home. She was like, oh my God. So she's like, well, I'm going to try and call your dad and you stay there. Do not let them leave, you know, whatever. So I walk back and we're all still sitting here. And now this dude has come.
Oh, goodness.
And he is an old, like, he reminds me of, God, of course I cannot think of the dude's name. Big old mustache, Western dude, just recently passed.
Sam Elliott?
Yes. He reminds me of Sam Elliott, but drunk. And
I don't think Sam Elliott is dead, but keep going.
Oh, he's not? Okay, good. So he reminds me of Sam Elliott, but drunk. And so he's up there and they're all like looking at the back of my car and they're like, yeah, there's no damage, blah, blah, blah. You could just, you know, blah, blah, blah. You could give her your number. You could give her my. And I'm like, I just really like, my dad is going to kill me if I don't just get in touch with him. So my mom pulls up. She could not get in touch with my dad. So she gets out and she immediately sees that the situation is that we are surrounded by drunk people, adults at 7:30 in the morning. And so she's like, you know what? I just really do need to call my husband. So she walks into the beauty parlor that had just opened and was like, these people hit my daughter. Can I please use your phone to call the police? So she calls the police, telling them that they're just calling my husband. And then the police officer comes. Now everyone's freaking out because there's actual officer on the scene. So he pulls my sister over, talks to her separately, asks her what happens. He pulls me over. And while he's like, just tell me what happened. And while he's telling me what happened, or while I'm trying to tell him what happened, one of the drunk women keeps walking. And my mom was with us both when he was talking to us. Keeps walking on, and she's like, ma'am, did you see the car that pushed me into you? The third car that pushed me into you? And he's like, ma'am, stand over there when I'm done talking to the young lady, then I'm going to come talk to you. And she's like, yeah, I'm just trying to ask the young lady a question. So did you see that third card? He's like, ma'am. And she finally like gets her leave. And he goes, oh my God. And my mom's like, that's why I called you. So they got arrested. And I will never forget, like, they're putting the driver in cuffs. And I'm like getting into my car. And she mouths something at me that I did not understand. But I was just like, that woman just cursed my life. And then we drove. My mom followed us to school because we were, of course, very late. And literally, as we're, she's like, I don't want you guys getting in trouble for this. So literally, as we're walking in, like down the long, long school hall, at the very end, the principal is literally walking towards us, jacket flying, like just ready to bust us. His face is granite. And my mom puts her hands on our backs and goes, we just had our first car accident. And he's like, and his face totally changed. He's like, oh my God, is everyone okay? So yeah, that was my first day of junior high.
Wow.
First day of high school ever. And I think we're talking about video games.
We'll get there. For the record, Samuel Elliott is still alive.
Oh good, I like him.
He's 77, but
he just said something cancelable, right? Like,
he didn't put in the news for something, and that's why I think I thought he died.
Like, he said he didn't like The Power of the Dog because it was gay or something.
Oh, did he?
Was that him?
I'm just gonna Google it.
Sam Elliott controversy. I hope not. He was on Parks and Rec.
Is there homosexuality in The Power of the Dog? It's the third thing that came up. He always felt guilty about not serving in Vietnam. He does not like Yellowstone, calls it a soap opera. Oh, Jane Campion on Sam Elliott being a little bit of a bitch.
That's it. Okay.
Anyway.
Any hoozles.
Okay.
In the 1991 film, Fester, portrayed by Christopher Lloyd, is long lost. The Adams saint said to have disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. He appears amnesically.
That's why I'm on the podcast, though, is tangents. It's the only thing I contribute.
He appears amnesically to the family as Gordon Craven, a man pretending to be Fester in order to defraud the Adamses out of their wealth. In the 1993 sequel, Fester is married to Debbie Jelinski, portrayed by Joan Cusack, who is attempting to murder the uncle and inherit his share of the Adams fortune.
Damn.
Fester's Quest is a 1989 shoot 'em up game for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
This is everything I wanted. I'm so excited.
And just like thrust her fists in the air like victory was hers.
Which uses the 1960s sitcom as a basis.
As I think that's the best basis.
As Uncle Fester sunbathes at night, aliens appear over the city the Adams reside in, beaming all of the town's occupants aboard the ship. It's up to Uncle Fester to save the town from its alien invaders.
Oh no.
Wow. Wow. That is like, I gotta say, you know what though? That is a hell of a pitch.
Yeah, like, you know, if you said
happening.
Like, let's have Christopher Lloyd as Uncle Fester shoot people and save a town from an alien invasion. I'd watch that. I'd pay $10 the movies for that.
So I'm working on like creating a pitch for my book, and I'm like, how am I going to make people, like, people could just read it, they'll like it, but how am I going to make them want to read it? That's the thing. And I'm like, you've got him, first of all, he's sunbathing at night, so already I'm hooked. Like, I'm going to read on. And then, like, aliens, like, what? Then they're beaming up the whole town willy-nilly, like, there's no, like, I don't know, vetting system here. So it's up to him to save them. Like, you have it all. You've got weird hook. You've got action. You've got a conflict.
I told Meredith I wouldn't show anything, but I might bring up the.
We weren't not going to be acting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I usually give guests a head up if you're going to be doing like any cold reading or anything like that. And we weren't going to do any of that today, but I may bring up the YouTube video and have Meredith describe it. I like that. That's like always fun.
There's a trailer. Well, because we're on a freaking podcast and people sometimes forget that people
can't. Not a visual medium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So Meredith, the elevator pitch for your book is you take the pitch for the game and just swap it out with the names of your characters.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, there is space stuff in my, there's fairies.
See,
space battle.
So one thing that I want to stress before I show this video, which I am going to do. This is the intro to the game. I want to stress that this is about as deep as we get into Adam's lore.
So this is like their house night.
For the entirety of the game.
Excellent.
So
it's pixelated.
Oh my God, the music.
There's the moon. We're panning. There's the city. There's Uncle Fester in his little chair with a wizard hat and a drink.
Apple juice?
And there are the aliens. There's like a little flying saucer hovering over the city. It's very annoying. Is that the beam? That little rectangle is a beam?
Oh no!
Uncle Fester is concerned. His eyes are wide. Oh, and now it says Fester's Quest, and it's like in all funky letters.
And they do have like an overly jazzy version of the
Let us hear that. I think you need to let us hear that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. Oh God, it's so bad.
It slaps. Oh, I don't make the rules. It slaps.
All right. Yeah. Okay. And we're gonna stop that.
Instead of snaps, we've got slaps.
The game covers Fester's journey through neighborhoods, sewers, and households, blasting aliens with his trusty, upgradable blunderbuss and a whip.
Oh, okay. That's character appropriate.
Side note, I've played this game a few times, never beating it, never, never intending to beat it, and we'll get into that for just a bit, but this whip that they keep telling me about, I have never used it. They do not tell you how to use it. Apparently, it's a button, but every time I've pressed that button, it has never worked.
It's like trying to skip things on your AirPods.
Yeah. In households, the game switches to a first-person view as Fester navigates an extremely pseudo 3D maze. One such maze contains
extremely pseudo. Let's just sit with that for a minute.
I'm imagining like the maze from like the Encarta CD-ROM, but
Encarta.
That's exactly what it is. The like old Windows screensaver, but shittier.
Oh my God.
Wow.
One such maze contains the only life upgrade in the game, which allows Fester to take a total of 3 hits before dying instead of 2.
Oh God, that's not much of an upgrade.
Along the way, he is assisted by other members of the Adams family who supply him with additional items, weapons, and hints about where to go next.
What does Thing supply him with?
Light bulbs. So he puts those in his mouth so that he can light dark rooms.
Oh, I thought he was going to say a hand to hold. He's a friend.
that's being way too generous.
Always did strike me as like a little sinister.
Or you can get keys to open doors. Upgrades to your weapon, which that's the thing is when you beat an enemy, there's a chance for it to leave an upgrade to your gun or your whip. But the thing is they're either blue or red, and a blue upgrade will move your weapon like up one level. A red one will drop it down one level. And this is never communicated to the player. So you're just grabbing whatever you want. And then suddenly your weapon gets shittier and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Also, what about colorblind people?
Fuck them.
Oh, yeah. That's a good question.
You'd have to have someone next to you and be like, is that blue or red?
We'll get into this a little bit later, but this is not a good game.
Okay. What? I'm disgusted.
I couldn't tell that by the music and the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, the pitch was exciting, but.
Well, dial yourself back.
Let's see his face when he saw that flying saucer.
Utilizing the noose item summons Lurch, who appears and destroys all
enemies.
Did
anyone else
enemies.
Just start singing past the point of no return in their head as soon as Dean said noose? No?
Okay. No, I'm sorry.
No one else is kind of an opera. Okay.
Lurch, who destroys all on-screen enemies. At the end of each level, Fester battles an alien boss. Eventually, Fester boards the alien mothership and defeats the alien leader, staving off the invasion. Fester is embraced by the populace of the town and lives happily ever after.
Mm. Wow. So the alien invasion just like stopped with a town in upstate New York, and then they were like, well, this didn't work out. Guess we're done.
Yeah.
Pretty
also,
much, yeah.
Like, why that town? Why now? Oh, there's so many questions.
It's a series of poor decisions. The game utilizes the same engine that Sunsoft, the game's developer and publisher, used for another game, Blaster Master, which is a much better game.
I think you played that game.
No, I think... No, you
I'm were, thinking of Blaster Ball.
Yeah. Which
I loved Blaster Ball.
If I'm thinking of the same game, there's actually a really interesting story behind that.
The
Blaster Ball that you played, not to get too off topic, but there's a game designer named Tim Schafer. He was kind of at the forefront of a lot of the point-and-click LucasArts adventure games. And apparently he was interviewing for his position with LucasArts, and he was asked if he had played any of those games or any of their games, and he said he was a really big fan of Buster Ball.
Uh-oh.
What he didn't know is that they had programmed the game so that the title would appear as Buster Ball if you had pirated
the
game. No! Oh, no.
Oh, no!
He got the position anyway. But there's that.
Oh,
man.
The game had Fester's Quest, not Blaster Ball. The game has received largely mixed to negative reviews. While many people praise the game's soundtrack by Naoki Kodaka, the critiques boil down to the fact that the game is exceedingly difficult, repetitive, and has little to do with the source material. Because, I mean, like I said, the shot of the Adams house and the fact that that Uncle Fester is sunbathing at night and there's Adams family characters like sprinkled throughout the game, that's about where the connection ends. There's definitely no aliens in Adams lore. There's if the Adams had a gun, I guess it would be a blunderbuss.
I
can't really think of what other type of gun they would have.
I feel like Morticia would have like one of those little tiny ones that you can fit in your boobs.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. But I don't know about anyone else. But a blunderbuss feels right.
Yeah, I agree.
But like, that's about where it ends. And they talk about it being very repetitive and overly difficult. The game takes place on like a kind of a heads down perspective. And the thing is like you move around this area and the enemy appears on that tile whenever that tile appears on the screen. So if you like...
I'm so confused.
So let me put it this way. The position on screen appears, the enemy appears, and it comes for you. So you like back up to give yourself some room to shoot and attack the enemy. You defeat the enemy and you go forward again. That position on the map of the level reappears and it's programmed so that when that part of the map appears on screen, the enemy respawns. So every time you try to get past that map, that point on the map, a new enemy appears.
And so, oh man!
And if you're
that
not,
seems like poor programming.
It is. And to make matters worse, there's enemies like later on in the game that multiply when you hit them.
Oh, Jesus.
And again, that same kind of programming is in play. So you'll like back up a little bit because you're trying to get away from these enemies so that you can attack them. But not only are more multiplying, but every time you try to get back to where you were, that original enemy appears. And whenever you attack it, like five more appear. So it's incredibly difficult game.
Yikes.
Which on the flip side of that, those pseudo 3D sequences that I was talking about earlier, there are no enemies in those sections. So you're not like shooting in it. You're just going through a maze. So you're like, why are these here? I don't know why they made this game. I think they just did it.
You think it was money? Maybe money?
I kind of
capitalize on the brand new goth subculture.
Oh,
you know, those goths, they have all that money to throw around and all those NESs.
Which, by the way, I'm going to share my screen again. We're not going to watch any more video, but I do want to show you this box art. This box art is kind of legendary.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
So it's like him with a spider on his forehead.
Wait.
He looks frightened. There's lightning behind him with, like, the house.
He has very red lips.
Very red lips.
It looks like Rocky Horror lips. And it looks like he's going, like, and he's got like a mink coat on or something.
Something.
And like, he's not looking at the spider in his head. He like looks like he's glaring in fear at the Nintendo official ceiling. And it has nothing about aliens. It just doesn't. It doesn't represent accurately, I believe, what the game entails.
Let me see if I can zoom in on this back art, because the thing, we haven't talked about box art a whole lot on the podcast, because again, this isn't a visual medium. But part of the experience of picking out a game was back of the box always had some blurb about why you should play the game.
Like a book has blurbs.
Yeah, definitely. It's that same mentality. So I'm trying to figure out like if I can zoom in and read the blurb about this. It's just a kidnapping of an entire city by an alien UFO. Will Fester
sit, I think it says. Sit still.
Will Fester sit still for this?
And it's that picture of him in his lawn chair, like,
yeah.
Looking
and the beaming up, I will say the beaming up on this cover art does not match the beaming up that we were shown in the live.
No, it was just like a little square.
Yeah, yeah. A much longer rectangle actually looks like a beam. Before it was like, here is a little tiny square.
Yeah. Your quest begins, for starters, takes on slime replicators, skeeters, globules, and giant scorpions. Your health is at stake, not to mention your life. Will you whip the alien bosses, or will they whip you?
Who knows? I'm so scared.
Lucky for you, this is a family affair. And what a family! Find your way to Thing and help. And help is right around, or is right...
right at hand.
Right at hand.
Oh, okay.
I mean, come on.
Hey, I'm trying. In trouble, just ring for Lurch, and he'll give those aliens trouble with a capital L.
Lovel.
The fate of the whole city is in your hands, and we've saved the worst for last.
That looks like the mother alien from Sims 4 Strangerville that you have to fight against. Like, it looks just like it.
I just feel like this whole thing is a little misleading.
I've said this already, but I'm not sure why they decided, like, there has to have been some sort of licensing deal that had to go forward. Like, just slap the Addams Family.
Oh, like you think that maybe they would lose the rights to make the Addams Family video game if they didn't shit something out in a certain amount of time?
It's gotta be something like that, or because there are other Addams Family video games that have been made that we're not going to talk about, but it's had to have been something that made this.
Yeah.
And furthermore, there is a glitch in the North American release of the game that makes Fester's bullets collide with the wall, making it sometimes extremely difficult to attack enemies in narrow passageways, which, by the way, narrow passageways are like 75% of this game. One of the kind of cool ideas is that, like I said, you can upgrade your weapon, and there's you can kind of see it in one of these screenshots. There's like a shot that travels in kind of a wave pattern, and there's another kind of shot that goes like in a circular pattern, gradually moving forward. All of those weapons, while they're more powerful than your base shot, are useless in this game, because again, you're in narrow passageways and they hit the wall, and you can only hit enemies that are like a little bit in front of you. So it's like, why is this even here?
Wow.
But anyway, so that's about it for this game. That's the story of Fester's quest.
Iconic. I want to buy it. I want it.
Let me pull up eBay real quick to see how.
Ooh, let's do a quick SmackDown. How much do we think it would cost on eBay?
$10.
I'm gonna say $30.
All right. We're gonna judge that by the buy it now option.
What are you saying, Dean?
We've got Meredith at $10 and Anne at $30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Dean, are you putting out your phone with that
money? I'm gonna say $5.
Okay.
NES. Buy it now for $13.
$13.59. Meredith's closest without going over.
Yep, Meredith is closest without going over. Does Price is Right rules. So there we go. So that is the story of Fester's Quest.
Amazing.
I wonder who buys this shit. There, like, what's going on here? And it's like, I'm going to buy this Fester's Quest.
There's a surprisingly vibrant market for, like,
terrible video games?
Yes.
Maybe it's like you remember playing this game when you were growing up, and then you're like, here it is on eBay for $9. I'll check it out. And then you're like, oh, this was a waste of $9.
Yeah.
That's one reason they're remaking all of the, like, the She-Ra and the and Voltron and all that stuff, which, by the way, very good remakes if you haven't seen them.
Oh my God, the She-Ra is so good.
She-Ra is great. Voltron is actually also very good. But, like, because the people who watch them, like, mostly Gen Xers, now have, like, some money and will buy this shit.
Yep. We're right at the point of the 30-year nostalgia cycle where the late 80s, early 90s are coming back, so.
Yeah.
Weird.
So,
same.
We're going to go ahead and wrap things up. Anne, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope this was a little bit of a fun jaunt through of an extremely niche area of video game history. But
I'm so happy. Like, I actually, it was funny. Just last Wednesday, I wore my Wednesday Addams dress to work. So I am actually the audience for this video game. So
which
I am super excited about this.
Which, by the way, I probably should
have
said this.
Kind of a Wednesday hair thing going on.
Yeah, right? No, like, so I took it, like, this is gonna be, so I took a picture of myself in my Wednesday Addams dress, and I had my hair up in a bun, and then I texted it to my group chat, and then one of my friends goes, look out, if you do your hair in braids, you're gonna look like my number one girl crush, and I'm gonna be in love with you. So I got home, and I took out my bun, did my hair in braids, and took a picture of me doing a kissy face in the mirror for her, and she was like, well, we're dating now.
Side fun story, I actually met Anne working. I worked at the retirement benefits department that she currently works for a time. And I would do this thing. When I started there, I was the one who assigned incoming appointments into the office back when you could actually go into an office and it wasn't illegal. But the thing is what I would do is I would, on days where we didn't have any appointments set up, I would say, okay, instead of appointments, here are some fun facts. So I kind of imagined this being like an hour and a half version of that email for Anne.
you'll be happy to know the fun fact tradition does live on.
Yes!
Now that I'm heavy as the head that wears the crown that has to use the RNG to pick 3 page numbers every time there's no appointments. Awesome. And on days that are themed, like if it's a holiday or something like that, I'll do some themed fun facts, and I get yelled at if they don't get out in a timely manner. It's great. It's great. It's great.
Aw, that's so cool. Dean, you created something that lives on.
Yes!
You like
something! Anyway, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. And is there anything that you'd like to plug before we let you go?
I would love to, yes. If you are interested in pictures of my nails and occasionally yelling about Duffy and Friends, which is an extremely niche part of the Disney fandom, you can follow me on Instagram at Bellissima _ BELLISMIMA. You can also hear me every other Sunday on Speak Beastie Podcast. We are I don't know if we're the only, but we're definitely one of the only podcasts about the movie series Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It is a very exciting time to be listening to Beastie because the new Fantastic Beasts movie is coming out as of the time of recording next Friday. So a very exciting time to be in the fandom. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Insta, Facebook, at Speak Beastie. And again, you can catch us on all of your favorite podcatchers. Speak Beastie Podcast.
Definitely. I'll put a link in the episode description. So there's that. Meredith, is there anything that you'd like to plug?
Right now, still blogging away at meredithreliance.com/faster. I'm also on the Twitters and the Instagrams at Meredith R. Lyons. If anyone wants to follow me and learn more about cats and sunsets and also my books.
All right. If there's any way that you would like to reach out to us to maybe suggest a topic or something along those lines, feel free to drop us an email. We are openingstagevgh@gmail.com. We are also on the Twitters @stagevgh. That's it. like for some reason it wouldn't let me do opening state at opening stage VGH, but I didn't want to fight it at that point, so I'm like, this is what we are now. Again, thank you, Anne, so much for joining us today. This has been Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great one. Bye. What's another terrible game that I could look up the price for?
That ET one.
Oh, that's gonna be real pricey.
Is that the one that was buried out in the desert or a different one?
Yeah, $2,600. Let's see how much that goes for.
Oh, yeah, $150. Wow.
$150 for like in the box and stuff like that. So. Wow.
What about the Home Improvement one?
Ooh, I do want to see that. This will be the last one. SNES.
Holy shit.
$105 cartridge.
What?
Free.
That was also a terrible one. They were also attacking me with Home Improvement. Which, like, it's like, what the F? And he's, like, got his nail gun and stuff, and he's, like, fighting aliens.
Definitely. I guess that's the thing, is if you want to license video games, just have them fighting aliens.
Well, I mean, I can kind of see why, because if they want to slap something together, you don't know what your demographic is going to be for this. Like, mm-hmm. like, these are sitcoms, so it's family stuff, so you don't necessarily want them fighting more humanity. So, like, aliens, you know, you can get behind that. They're attacking humanity. You don't have to, like,
holy shit. Dear listener, if you want Home Improvement, Power Tool Pursuit, sealed in box,
you need only
spend $4,000.
What is WADA? Why is WADA grading this?
I don't know.
What?
I could be wrong. I think, wait.
There
was kind of a controversy about, like, selling vintage video games at extremely overinflated prices, so that might be what's going on here.